Welcome out, everyone, tonight. My name is Robert Burns. I'm the chairman of the Northern Regional Advisory Council. We'll go ahead and we'll have introductions, then I'll kind of explain how the meeting will be run. So, John, would you start?
John Wall from Riverdale, represent Public at Large.
John Leonard, North Ogden, represent Sportsman.
John Blazard from Camas, representing Agriculture.
Craig Van Tassel from Camas, Sportsman representative.
Rice Thurgood, Perry, Utah, representing at large.
Russ Lawrence, Ogden, Utah, representing Public at Large.
Jeffrey Hicks from South Weber, at large.
Jim Gaskill, South Weber, at large.
Ed Neville from Farmington, representing non-consumptive.
Paul Cowley, representing the Forest Service.
I'm Justin Doling. I replaced Ron Hansen as regional supervisor. I serve as the executive secretary, and I'm a non-voting member.
Again, I'm Robert Burns. I live in Centerville, and I represent the public at large. Additionally, we have two members that are excused tonight, Jill Sylvie and John Cabot. Thank you. Also in our audience, we have two members of the Wildlife Board who represent Northern Utah, Bill Fenimore and Ernie Perkins, right here in the front row. Tonight we'll be hearing presentations on the agenda items. There's some agendas and some information back here on the table. We'll be voting on the action items. Our purpose here is to hear the presentation, take public input. We also receive public input through email and mail and talking with people we know. And then we'll make recommendations to the Wildlife Board, and they set the rules and the proclamation for wildlife in Utah. The meeting will be follow along the general line of, we'll have a presentation, we'll take questions from the public, we'll take questions from the council, then we'll have comments from the public, then we'll have comments from the council, and then we'll have a motion. If you want to comment, please fill out a blue card. There should be some back there on the table. Then I can call you up in order as we receive them and write down on there if you want to address the RAC or not. When you're commenting, we have a time limit of 3 minutes for a person representing themselves and 5 minutes for a person representing a group. When you're commenting, please speak into the microphone. The meeting's being recorded, and then we can get a good transcription for our written minutes also. If you'll all please join me and turn off the ringers on your cell phone, we can have a nice uninterrupted meeting. I believe that's all I have for description there. I'm hoping you all received a copy of the minutes that I emailed out. Okay. There is one change that I need to make sure that we have. John Wall was excused. I hadn't received his email that afternoon before I came to the meeting, so he will be excused for last meeting. With any additional amendments to the minutes? Seeing none, the chair would entertain a motion to approve those minutes. Jim?
Move that we accept the minutes as amended.
Second.
Okay. So we have a motion from Jim and a second from Ann to approve the minutes as amended. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Unanimous. We need to approve the agenda for tonight.
I move that we approve the agenda as provided.
We have Russ. We have a motion from Paul and a second from Russ to approve the agenda for tonight's meeting. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That's unanimous. I do see on the agenda that there is not a wildlife board update. So we'll just take care of that under old business. I'll go ahead and tell you that the wildlife board approved the three action items that we had approved ourselves, the same as presented. Our motion to request a variance or a change for youth fishing contests is the division will talk and meet with the fishing groups during the summer and come back with a proposal next year if it's required. Any questions on the Wildlife Board actions? I'll go ahead and hand it over to you, Justin.
Okay, I'll just give a brief regional update. I want to start out with some personnel changes. We've had three since the last RAC meeting. Jim Christensen, who's in the audience. Jim, would you raise your hand or stand up? Jim is was our assistant manager at Public Shooting Grounds. He's now replaced Kurt Enright as the box elder biologist. Riley Peck, who was an intern out of Brigham Young University, has replaced Masako Wright, who was our sensitive species biologist. So Riley joined us, I believe, the first part of last week. And then Conservation Officer Jade Summons out of Rich County has moved on to the Forest Service as a law enforcement officer with the Forest Service. He'll be working out of Twin Falls. And for the short interim period, we probably will not fill in behind Jade, but utilize some of the conservation officers and biologists in the area to fill in the holes in the meantime. For the law enforcement section, our law enforcement section is working pretty diligently on developing an action plan to address poaching on our winter ranges. So they're putting together a pretty aggressive plan. They're going to be out in the field this winter, monitoring and checking up on our winter range. So hopefully that will yield some good results. The wildlife section, our deer hunt, as my understanding was pretty slow. We anticipated that there'd be very few yearlings in the harvest, and that did show up in our check stations. We had very few yearlings as a result of winter loss last year. We did have a fair number of mature bucks, and those bucks were in really, really good condition. So the deer that did survive the winter did quite well, given all the available forage. The other thing going on in the wildlife section is our biologists are working on elk plan revisions. We probably will form at least three committees here in the region to look at possibly adjusting our population objectives. Population objectives dictate how many animals we can maintain on a particular herd unit. And so we'll be forming probably three committees to address possible changes in those objectives. Our biologists are also in the middle of our post season deer classification. I would encourage anybody on the RAC that has an interest to come out and join our biologists on one of those outings to please take advantage of that. From the waterfowl world, our swans are starting to move into the Great Salt Lake marshes in pretty good numbers. The last count, we had about 43,000. Most of those were centered around Bear River Refuge and some of the private clubs, but they should start dispersing out into the other marshes here within the next week or so. From our habitat section, work on a Millville face for restoring and improving habitat for mule deer continues. There's also work on Bud Phelps to continue to improve upland game habitat. That's a WMA, Wildlife Management Area, right there adjacent to Cutler Marsh. We have a couple of projects on the Weber River, restoring some of the aspects of the Weber River, restoring the oxbows and some of the ripples that occur there. And we're doing that work in exchange for angler access. Also, our habitat biologists are working with UDOT and private landowners within the sardine, K, Canyon corridor. That's from Manaway back north into Logan. They're working with UDOT and private landowners to improve the deer crossings that occur there in the canyon. Our aquatic section is working pretty diligently on cutthroat restoration. We have two projects. In fact, they're going to be restocking cutthroat, native cutthroat, back into Willard Creek, which is near the town of Willard. And they finished up a restoration effort on Holmes Creek last week. Also, our aquatic section is developing two new urban fishery opportunities in the town of Kaysville and Layton. And they're also working with the Kaysville Irrigation Company to ensure that those areas will retain some water for urban fisheries. So there should be a couple of new opportunities for those that like to fish close to home. Recently, our non-game aquatics folks were involved in a leash chub project out on Antelope Island. Leash chub is an endangered fish, and they wanted to create a refuge population on Antelope Island in the event that some of the native populations blink out. They have a source to restock those. So that was completed. And I just want to let everybody know that the Weber River right now is really, really hot fishing. If you like to catch browns, the brown trout fishing on the Weber River is incredible. So I encourage you to get out. The last section is our outreach section. Our outreach section manages Hardware Ranch. They're putting the final touches on a habitat management plan for Hardware Ranch. That should be coming hopefully through the RAC in December. They're also working with the media on what we call wild find projects, where we invite the media out to do certain stories on different projects the Division of Wildlife Resources is involved with. So we continue to work with the media. And they've also been aggressively trying to develop some interactive mapping so that when this new 30-unit hunt format comes out, the public can go onto our website. It's wildlife.utah.gov. Go on to hunting, click on to big game, and then about a quarter of the way down that page, there's an interactive map feature that allows you to go on and get a feel for where you used to hunt and what unit that would be, what that would fall in under this 30-unit format. The other thing is I've placed some question and answer fact sheets back here in the back of the room. We've been inundated with questions about what this 30-unit format will look like. Hopefully you've had a chance to pick one of those up and look through it, and hopefully the answers to the most often asked questions are available. And if you need any additional clarification, please contact our regional office. And I'll turn the time back over to the chairman.
Thank you, Justin. We'll go ahead and go to item number five, Bucks and Bulls and Once in a Lifetime, 2012 season dates and application timeline. Anise?
Okay, so I'll be presenting the Bucks and Bulls Once in a Lifetime season dates and other dates that pertain to the drawing. Start with the 2012 deer hunt recommendations. As you all may or may not know, this coming year in 2012 will be the first year we'll go into our general season. We'll be hunting unit by unit. And as Justin mentioned, we'll be hunting on 30 units for general season. A lot of the information is already online. Those units have already been approved by the Wildlife Board. If you have specific questions, we do have a frequently asked questions section on our website as well that may answer all those questions. And if it doesn't, please feel free to call any of the regional offices or the Salt Lake office, and we'll be happy to answer any of those questions. I know it's going to be a big change for a lot of people, so we want to make sure it goes as smoothly as possible. Now, with that, the season days for those general season units will be fairly similar to what they have been in the past. Archery season will be August 18th to September 14th, a 28-day season. that's similar to what it has been. Muzzleloader season will be September 26th to October 4th, a 9-day season. And the any weapon season would be October 20th through the 28th, a 9-day season statewide. Okay, moving on to elk hunt recommendations. Not a lot of big changes on the elk hunting front. Basically, archery spike bull will be a 21-day hunt from August 18th to September 7th. The any bull archery hunt would be a 28-day hunt, the 18th through September 14th. The reason the spike hunt is shorter is because, as you may or may not know, spike hunting takes place on the same units that limited entry hunting take place. So this gives those folks that draw a limited entry tag at least a week without interference from spike hunter, and that week is the closest to the rut. So that's the reason we closed the spike hunt 7 days earlier. Any weapon elk hunt will be October 6th through the 18th, a 13-day hunt. The muzzleloader elk hunt, the general season, will be October 31st through November 8th, a 9-day hunt. And then we have the youth any bull hunt, which will takes place usually at the same time as the limited entry bull hunt. So that's September 15th through the 23rd. That'll be a 9-day hunt. And there's a late youth any bull hunt that takes place only in the northeastern region. It's a specific hunt to deal with some bulls that come off of private land and are only available on public land during that late season. And this is usually, in the past, it's been about 15 permits, so it's not a big number of permits. But it's a long hunt just to give youth opportunity to harvest some bulls that are available in that area. It's also a hunt that helps the region deal with some depredation issues as well. That's why it's such a long season. Okay, some of the changes to the seasons and to the things that we'll be doing with the drawing. We would like to allow those who draw an any bull permit, a youth any bull permit, to be able to harvest an antlerless elk as well. In the past, this has been a bull-only hunt. But since these are youth and there's only roughly around 400 statewide, it wouldn't be any detriment to the elk population to allow them to take a cow or an antlerless elk, which would make it a more positive hunt if they're able to take either sex animal. So that we're making that recommendation. We're recommending removing the split of the bull moose hunt. As many of you may know, right now it goes it goes for a period and then stops during the muzzleloader deer hunt, and then it starts up again at the end of that season. We're recommending basically adding those 9 days into the hunt and making it go straight through. This will not muzzleloader hunters will not have to wear Hunter Orange because of new laws that have been passed those hunting a once-in-a-lifetime species don't have to wear orange. Therefore, we're not going to require those hunting with a muzzleloader to wear orange either. So that's a change. It makes more sense. You can hunt straight through. You don't have to take that 9 days off, and it's a once-in-a-lifetime species hunt. We recommend discontinuing the buck-bull combo hunt. This was a hunt that lent itself well to regional hunting, but does not lend itself well to unit-by-unit hunting. It was mostly done to remove pressure from one portion of the northern region to another. We can do this now with changing permit numbers on any unit that we need to. So it's kind of outlived its use, and we're recommending discontinuing that hunt when we go to unit-by-unit. We're also recommending discontinuing the over-the-counter statewide youth archery permits. Again, those permits were statewide permits, and once we go to unit by unit, it will be a lot more difficult to administer that process. We could theoretically split them out into 30 units, but we didn't get a whole lot of takers the last couple of years we've had it. I think we've had 1,500 permits available, and have only sold roughly 200 statewide. So, again, a program that works well when you have statewide our tree, but doesn't work that great when you go to unit by unit. Okay, some regional changes that are recommended in the southern region. They're recommending a new limited entry late any weapon hunt on the Ponsagon. As you know, a lot of our limited entry elk units have an early and late rifle season. The Ponsagon does not have a late rifle elk season currently, and the region has started to see some bulls on that unit late in the later season, and would like to provide that opportunity to hunters. We're also recommending a new nanny goat hunt on the beaver unit. That population continues to be above objective, and to try to control that population, we need to have some nanny permits to basically bring that population down. And there's also a recommendation to clarify the Thousand Lakes boundary. Basically, there used to be a regional boundary, so there wasn't a whole lot of changes, but once we went to unit by unit, they started looking, and there were some discrepancies between the units. So this basically just clarifies the boundary between the neighboring San Rafael and Henry Mountains boundary. Not a substantive change, it just makes it a clearer boundary. In the southeastern region, they're recommending a change on the Henry Mountain bison hunt boundary, and this is basically to deal with some bison that have moved into areas that are outside the boundary currently, and this will allow hunters to be able to harvest those animals if they are in that area during the hunt. It also cleans up the boundary and removes the national park there, puts it outside of the boundary. There was part of the boundary that was inside. Part of the park boundary was inside of our boundary, and it caused them problems. So it's kind of a deal. It makes some of those bison that have moved into that area available for harvest, and it also cleans up the boundary between the park and us. We're recommending changing the 9 Mile Range Creek unit to an any bull elk unit. This unit in the past has been any bull on private land, but limited entry on public land. And it's led to a lot of confusion. We were given the assignment last year to basically go and try to figure out a way to deal with that. They met with the landowners on that unit. The region, after all those meetings, decided to basically make it an any bull unit, which would clarify things quite a bit. Another recommendation is to change the dates on the Dolores Triangle limited entry muzzleloader elk hunt. Basically, there was some overlap with the rifle hunt there on that unit. It's a fairly small unit, but they just wanted to make sure that there were no other hunts going on. So it's just a change to deal with an overlap. Northeastern region. They're on the book lifts. As you all know, we transplanted bison there a few years back. Those bison that we transplanted are not yet ready to hunt, but there are bison nearby on the Ute reservation that are starting to basically overflow onto the book cliffs. So this hunt is meant to deal specifically with those bison that are coming off the tribe. So it does not include the whole unit. It just includes that north western part of the unit where these bison are coming off the tribe. So we do want to provide opportunity, because once they come off the tribe, they're basically public bison. So we can offer an opportunity there without really harming the population that we've transplanted there. We recommend changing the Uinta Basin extended archery boundary. Basically, right now, it does go up a little ways up onto the foothills, which means they are harvesting some mountain deer, and also is encroaching a little bit on the Diamond Mountain Deer Unit. So by changing this boundary, it basically constricts it a little bit, makes it more of what it was designed to do, to deal with deer in town. So that's the rationale behind changing that boundary. And then they also wanted, in the northeastern region, to recommend changing the youth late elk hunt boundary. As I mentioned, that's that hunt where it's for youth late in the season. What they did is they made that boundary larger, so it would expand opportunity for youth. there was more areas they could go. If they can't find elk in one area, they can go to another. It also expands the DWR's ability to address depredation issues by using these youth to go harvest these animals. So basically they made that boundary a little bit larger than it was in the past. In the northern region, we're recommending changing the Crawford Mountain portion of the cash unit to an any bull elk unit. This is basically all of the stuff east of Bear Lake to the Wyoming border and north of the Idaho border down basically to about Woodruff. That area traditionally has not held a lot of elk. There's not a lot of good elk habitat there, so the elk in that area are finding crops as new elk habitat. So to deal with that issue, they're recommending making that an any bull unit, which makes it easier to deal with those bull elk that end up in that area. Recommending a new any goat hunt on the Willard Peak unit, basically to reduce hunter crowding. There are still many more goats on that unit than we would like to see, and we really can't add more hunters on that unit without some crowding issues. So by splitting it into two goat hunts, we could add permits and not have as much crowding. Recommending expanding the archery boundary in the northern region to the shore of the Great Salt Lake. Basically, right now, I-15 is the boundary, so we just push it all the way out through the valley to the shores of the... This is to help deal with some nuisance and depredation problems in the valley. Okay, some of the key dates that we need to know for the drawing. The big game drawing for bucks and bulls and once in a lifetime and the new dedicated hunter applications are basically from February 1st to March 1st. The application period for bonus and preference points and application withdrawal is February 1st through March 8th. So you can put in for any hunt through March 1st, but if you want to just put in for a point, you have until March 8th to do so, or if you want to withdraw your application. And the results will be posted by May 31st. Now, current dedicated hunters that are already in the program have to choose a unit by January 13th, and they'll be receiving letters from that program to do so in that way. Okay, shed antler and shed horn season dates. Basically, you have to have the online course to go out between February 1st and April 15, 2012. And the dates that hunters may purchase or sell big game or its parts, antlers, heads, and horns legally taken may be bought or sold from February 15th through July 31st. Untanned hides of legally take big game may be bought and sold from August 1st, 2012 to February 14th, 2013. And those days have not changed. We just put them on this presentation because they have to go in the same place, in the same time as the drawing does. Okay, lifetime license questionnaire. Again, because we're going a unit by unit basis, they'll have a deadline of March 1st to choose their unit. Those who fail to choose their unit by that deadline will basically have to pick up whatever's left over after the drawing is done. Okay, disabled hunters, general season hunt extensions. So these are extensions that we have annually for disabled hunters. For archery deer, it's a preseason extension, so they start before the regular season, August 13th through the 17th, and then the regular hunt starts on the 18th. Muzzleloader season, again, that's a preseason start date, September 21st through the 25th. The regular general deer any weapon season, they have also a preseason extension, 10/15 to 10/19. Archery elk, August 13th through the 17th, similar to the deer. Muzzleloader, any bull elk, it's a postseason, so they go after the season's over, 11/9 through 11/14. And then the any weapon, any bull elk, it's a preseason, 9/15 through 23. And then they also get to hunt during the late youth hunt, but only in that northeastern region portion, so that where the youth are hunting as well. The muzzleloader spike elk is a postseason extension, 11-12 through 11-16, and the any weapon spike elk is a postseason as well, October 19th to the 23rd. So those are basically the extensions for the disabled hunters. We've always had those extensions in the past. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Nice. We'll now take questions from the public on the presentation. If you have a question, please come up to the microphone, state your name, and ask your question, and Nice will try to respond.
Hello. I want to know why we're going to ruin the family hunt by splitting the state up into 32 units. And why we don't have a bounty on cougars, bears, and coyotes.
Because
okay, that's the only way we're going to get a mic named Scott Hatch.
Okay. The presentation, so this is a time to ask questions on the presentation. The Wildlife Board's already said that we're going to 30 units.
Okay. Well,
and we're not discussing cougars tonight.
Well, that's my question, okay? If you want to answer it or not.
Anise, go ahead.
So basically the reason we're going to 30 units is we were asked to take it out as an option, and over through the public process, it was a fairly, you know, split decision, but about half of the folks were for it and about half of the folks were opposed to it. And it basically came down to a decision that a wildlife board had to make, a very tough decision, and they decided to go with 30 units. That's the reason we're here today proposing hunt dates for those 30 units. So whether it ruins the family hunt or not is, you know, neither here nor there at this point. I think, would you please let me finish, sir? It is important. It is.
But, sir, stop, please. You need to respect his time to respond to your question, okay?
I think most people can still find a way to go out hunting on a specific unit with their family. From the surveys we've done, very few people hunt more than one unit. So, therefore, it's not going to ruin the family hunt to that extent. I agree with you. It's going to limit what folks can do. And that's, you know, that's a decision that's already been made and is not going to be changed here. The second question dealt with lions and bears. We manage those populations with accordance to management plans that are passed through the public process, and we will continue to do so.
Sir, this is a question period, right? And I ask you to come up to the microphone if you had a question. We can't record what you're saying in the back, all right? Please follow the rules how we run the meeting, okay? Are there any additional questions from the public? We'll go to questions from the council. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, on this... All right. On this moose hunt, if someone has a muzzleloader deer tag and a moose tag, will they just be able to carry two guns, or how will they deal with that?
Honestly, yeah.
I mean, you can't carry a rifle.
Sure.
A breech loader on the muzzleloader hunt.
Yeah, they'll have to take the whatever animal they have a tag for with the proper weapon. So yeah, if that's, I guess they're going to have to figure out how to either carry two weapons or hunt for one thing one day and another thing another day.
What's law enforcement going to say about that?
Well, and currently in the any weapon season, you can hunt with any weapon. So I mean,
but not during the muzzleloader season.
No.
You can't have a breech loader.
And we have other units where similar things happen on all of our goat units. There are other hunts going on. Archery hunts go on during the goat rifle season. So This isn't anything new. It's just, it is going to be a little bit more tricky, but if somebody shoots an animal, it better the correct projectile better be the one that killed that animal.
Can I add something to that?
You bet.
There are similar situations when a weapon would be restricted to someone unless they were also in possession of a license or permit that allowed them to take something else. And this would be a similar situation. They could legally possess both of those firearms if they had a permit that allowed them to carry each of those. Obviously, like Anise said, they could only use the appropriate weapon to take the respective animal for each permit.
So the answer is they would be allowed to carry both guns?
Yes.
Okay.
Mitch, I just need to have your name for the record.
Mitch Lane, Sergeant with Law Enforcement here in the Northern Region.
Thank you.
And maybe this is a little off the topic, but not much off the topic. And my question is, are we going to have some good comparisons between hunter satisfaction pre-30-unit division and post-30-unit division? And if so, what kind of weight will we give the results?
Sure. We always have satisfaction index on all the surveys we do. So, we will continue to do that. Satisfaction generally follows hunt success. So if folks are able to harvest an animal, usually their satisfaction is high. If they're not, usually their satisfaction is low. And it runs about the same all the time. But if we do see a decrease in satisfaction, we'll certainly look at the reason for it.
Bryce?
Nice, I got a question on the goat. Instead of, I know the Willard is obviously over objective. Have they looked into expanding him to the north of Sardine,
mm-hmm.
or south, Weber Canyon,
sure.
Farmington, instead of just killing them all?
Maybe I'll let Darren answer that since it's his unit and he is here.
More of a nursery herd than, maybe just a kill to reduce numbers.
Darren DuBois, regional biologist, Northern Region. They're kind of doing it on their own right now. We do have goats on Ogden Peak. We've got goats across Weber Canyon. We've got goats on the cache. They've come all the way around. So they're kind of that's why that objective was set fairly low. We're getting to that point where goats are starting to expand on their own. And there are some on the Wellsvilles. We count a couple. Usually they're probably billies that have made it up to the Wellsvilles. That's all pretty good goat habitat. The Forest Service manages those lands, and they have significant concerns about what goats might do to vegetation stuff. So if we there aren't any plans at the moment to augment those natural movements. I don't think it would be out of the realm of possibility, but that'd be something we'd have to discuss with the Forest Service and come up with a plan. And then the goats on Willard are fairly, I think all those goats are from basically 15 individuals to begin with. So I think we probably wouldn't be looking at taking goats from Willard and moving them locally. We'd probably be more interested in getting some genetic diversity from other herds, either in the state or outside of the state, and doing so we wouldn't necessarily transplant goats from Willard. We'd still be looking at trying to control that population through hunting. It would be tricky to catch goats on Willard, too. It's very rugged, so it'd be tough. You'd have a goat in Perry before you knew it. So,
And one thing I'd add to that, we are currently revising the statewide goat plan, and really you can't move goats unless you have an approved site to move it to. So we will be looking at those sites as approved sites. Again, we have to get the approval of the Forest Service before we can put them there. And there is a conflict. They don't perceive goats as being native, which makes it very difficult for us to put them in any new places. So if they pioneer there on their own, then we're able to supplement them. So it's a lot more tricky than just hopping up there, grabbing a few goats, and moving it up.
Thank you.
Ken.
Could you you go into a little bit more depth about the buck bull combo, getting rid of that? I just don't quite understand why.
Yeah, so basically that hunt was done because the northern region has private land units and public land units, and the private land units had little hunting pressure, and the public land units had lots of pressure. So to deal with that, we split 2,000 permits off the general deer hunt and put them on any bull units, which tend to be the private land units. Now we are no longer going to be managing on a regional basis. We're going to be managing on a unit-by-unit basis. So if we have overcrowding on a specific unit, we can just take permits off of it without having to put them anywhere else. Or we could put them somewhere else without having a buck-bull combo. So we can manage numbers of hunters without the buck-bull combo. The buck-bull combo goes along with any bull elk units. Those may not perfectly overlap with our 30 general season units. So there's a lot of complications that come along with the buck-bull combo that now that we can deal with it otherwise would rather not have that combo. Again, there's something to be said for hunting deer and elk at the same time. There may be a proposal down the road to combine those hunts, but that's a different thing. For now, to simplify matters and to keep our management, similar everywhere, it would be easier to not have that buck bull combo. It's outlived its use, I guess, for what we were trying to accomplish with it.
Jim.
Regarding the extended archery boundary in the northern region, it's already legal to use any weapon in that area, correct?
Correct. But with the extended archery boundary comes an extended archery season as well. So it goes clear.
Right, but this is not, it's not like they're moving in there. They live there. Right?
Correct. Yeah, we're extending the boundary so people can harvest them later in the year as well.
And do we anticipate that that's going to help alleviate the depredation problem?
It will alleviate some. We would still have to deal with some of it.
That's the main issue now, right?
For the most part, I can have Randy address it more to the point. From what I understand, they have some depredation and nuisance issues that they want to try to alleviate.
Randy Wood, wildlife manager. It's both. It offers some opportunity. We feel that there's some opportunity out there for the archers that go out farther to the west. We have some pockets out there where we have deer that could be taken with archery equipment. It's all private land. That are causing nuisance and depredation problems. So we expanded that to offer a little more opportunity and hopefully take some of those deer with the hunters instead of us out there causing the problems.
Why not extend the any weapon season just as well? It would certainly be a lot more efficient in killing the deer.
Presently, the any weapon season is out there.
Yep. They can go out. Why not extend that like we're extending the archery?
Oh, make it. I don't know. Maybe
have
it's
a late season.
If
you really want to kill the deer, a rifle is a whole lot better than a
right now. We have probably very few, and as far as I know, very few rifle hunters that hunt the west part of Davis and Weaver counties. We feel there's probably a better opportunity for the archers to get out there and amongst the small plots of land and the little areas to hunt.
Okay.
I have one question along the lines of this. The boundary in the description is only the Ogden extended archery boundary.
No, so it's both. They meet, but we extended the portion of the Wasatch that's in Davis County went out to the shore, and then also the Ogden unit went out to the shore of the Great Salt Lake. So they both go out there.
Okay. So in our packet, it says boundary change, Ogden extended archery boundary.
And it also should have been the Wasatch. The portion of the of that that's in our unit, the Wasatch extended hunt.
So that's in our region. We don't have a description of the boundary change for the Wasatch.
Okay.
It is included in there. If you read the boundary, it does go to I-15 and all the way north.
But it says, beginning on the Weber-Morgan County line and I-84 west on I-84 to the Weber-Davis County line, west on this county line to the 2498-foot contour line, shore of the Great Salt Lake, north on this elevation to the southern dike, Willard Bay Reservoir, et cetera, on around. It's the Ogden extended archery.
Yeah.
There's no Davis County in that boundary.
It went in with both.
My apologies if it's not there.
But it is to extend that portion in our region, both of them out to the boundary of the Great Salt Lake and around.
All right. So Anise's presentation said the extended archery was very general, whereas our packet just has the boundary extension for the Ogden.
Okay. And it's we were looking at our region, extended archery for our region.
Okay.
But the Wasatch goes through too.
So when we make our recommendation, if we do it as presented, it's for all of the extended archery within the northern region.
That's what we would like. The behind it was to extend it both in Davis and Weber County, so both of them.
Thank you. Paul.
Anise, can you talk to why we actually have dates when people can sell animal parts as far as the antlers or the hides, especially in view of the internet selling opportunities?
I'm sorry, say that again. Why do we?
So I'm wondering why we even put restriction dates on mm-hmm. selling animal parts as far as the antlers and the hides in view of today's open market with the internet.
Mitch, can you speak to that? Because basically it deals with it's set up so they can't basically sell them outside of the when they could have legally obtained them. So, we've always had those days, to be honest. I'm not exactly sure why they are where they are. I could find out and get back to you.
I guess, so the question is there a value to having dates? I understand why we'd want to restrict them to being parts of animals mm-hmm. legally taken.
Right.
But I'm not sure the dates provide much value at this point.
Yeah, I'm not exactly. It has some law enforcement implication, but it fails me right now.
Well, actually, to go on to that, there's no punitive damages for anybody who sells on eBay, unless you're going to follow up on that.
They do. They do actually monitor a lot of those things and make a lot of cases that way.
Bryce.
I got one more question back to the extended archery hunt. I know I grew up in Syracuse, and I know this is a depredation issue, you know, I support that, but some of these landowners, when they complain about the depredation problems, get reimbursed. Problem is, most of them won't allow hunters hunt. So it's like they won't let hunters hunt, but yet they're asking for handouts to compensate them. I mean, is there any way of saying, if you're going to ask for that, you have to allow the hunters, you know, grant permission?
Presently, no.
No. So you're done. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, isn't it true that they get permits to shoot deer on their property that are considered nuisance or depredation?
There are, in the rule, there are options for them to get those.
And they do, in fact, correct?
In some cases, they do get them.
But it's an option.
My neighbor.
It's an option, yeah.
They can take the money, too.
Yeah. Any other questions from the... Oh, Paul.
Okay, and Anise, here's another question, changing subjects a little. With the bison hunt over in the Book Cliffs, what coordination has taken place with the tribe over there?
Quite a bit. They may still not be on board with what we're doing fully, but they also have not managed their bison to hold populations where they need to be. So once they come off the tribe, basically we have to deal with them, whether they're they count towards our objective on our unit. So we need to be able to harvest them. There's been quite a bit of coordination. We've actually had nuisance hunts in that area dealing with animals that actually go off the unit to the west onto the Aviniquin unit, where we've killed quite a few bulls and cows on there as well. Again, we're trying to coordinate with them, but until they start managing their herds to where they're not busting at the seam, there's not a whole lot we can do but harvest what comes off.
Thank you.
Any additional questions from the council on the presentation? Oh, John Blesser.
My question is the preseason and postseason handicap hunts, and I wasn't quick in looking at the dates, but is there a, or could there be an issue with a rifle hunt overlapping over a muzzleloader hunt or an archery hunt? Or
no, they're done. Safety? Yeah, they're done in a way where they don't overlap. So the archery season is pre, so there's no other. The muzzleloader's pre as well. They're done in a way where it's another elk or it's an elk hunt on a deer with a rifle and so on. So. And there are so few that are doing it, it's not really going to be even if there is a little bit of an overlap, it's not going to be an issue as far as safety goes. Most of those folks are sticking to the roads and things like that. So,
Anise, can you give us a number on the extension request you get?
How many requests do we get?
Yeah, or how many you grant?
I don't have the exact number, but I don't think it ever goes over 150 or so statewide. And I don't know if we issue that many, but I think that's how many requests we get. I can get that number and get it back to you, but it's a fairly small number.
I think that's good. Bryce.
It's still longer for the limited entry hunts, though, right? It's postseason.
Those are different. Those are set on a unit by unit in a case by case basis. So yeah, those are decided by the regional biologist on a case by case basis.
Any additional questions from the council? Seeing none, we'll move to comments from the public. I only have one comment currently from the public for this agenda item. If you want to comment, please make sure you fill out a blue card and bring it up. So, Ben Louder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ben Louder. I'm here representing the Utah Bowman's Association tonight. I've got two recommendations to give to the RAC tonight. First of all, I'd like to show my appreciation for the ability to present here tonight. Thank you very much for that opportunity. My first recommendation, you may have seen in an email earlier today, I sent it out to all of the RAC members, and I handed out a copy on all the tables prior to the meeting. My first recommendation is actually a joint recommendation among the Mule Deer Foundation, United Wildlife Cooperative, Bow Hunters of Utah, and the Utah Bowman's Association. This recommendation is dealing with the 2012 archery deer hunt. We recommend that the archery deer hunt in 2012 continue to be statewide rather than making the archers choose a unit. The reasons for that are, as stated by DWR biologists several times over the past several years, there's no biological reason not to allow statewide archery hunting to take place. The number of hunters that harvest deer with archery tackle are not statistically impacting the buck-to-doe ratios. Also, back in 2009, there was a statewide archery committee put together. I sat on that committee, And in that committee was put together to address a perceived crowding issue in the southern region due to statewide archery. The outcome of that committee was that the majority of archery deer hunters do want to hunt statewide, and we ultimately really decided there's really not a crowding issue with archery deer hunting. Also, statewide archery may encourage an increased number of hunters to start to move to hunting with a bow. That could have benefits to all hunters in that it could create a less impact to the resource and provide opportunities to put more hunters out there without without having to cut permits due to the lower success rate that hunters have with a bow. Also, with the unit by unit, I know a big reason for that was to increase the buck to doe ratio. Hunting with a bow is a less, again, is a less successful strategy to hunt with, and thus we can increase the buck to doe ratio without an increased loss in opportunity. Also, if we were to allow statewide archery to continue, we'd be able to allow the statewide youth archery tags. I know when he said there was about 200 youth that took up that opportunity this last year, we'd be able to allow, you know, that to continue as well. That pretty much sums up my first recommendation. My second recommendation is concerning the mountain goat hunt on Willard Peak, which is here in the northern region. If you look at the dates that are being recommended by the DWR, there's an early season, a late season, and a nanny season. And they're all nine-day seasons. I personally feel that that is a short season for a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And these hunts are managed for 100% success rate. I would recommend that we extend those seasons to give those hunters that receive that once-in-a-lifetime opportunity the opportunity to have the best hunting experience they possibly can have. On the Beaver Unit is recommending similar proposals this year with an early hunt, a late hunt, and a nanny hunt. And I talked to Darren about this, our biologist, prior to the meeting, and he didn't see any biological reason not to extend the seasons. Anyway, what I would recommend is a similar season structure to what is being proposed on the Beaver Unit. In talking to Darren, it sounded like law enforcement would prefer to see Monday openers rather than Saturday openers. So my recommendation for the Willard Mountain Goat Unit would be to set the season for the early season September 10th to September 23rd, for the late season September 24th to October 14th, and then for the nanny season October 1st to October 14th. I personally feel that these dates would allow hunters that draw these tags to have a better opportunity to have the hunt that they're really looking for on that once-in-a-lifetime experience. That's all I've got. Thank you very much.
Ben, could you give me those season dates again?
Yeah, so the early hunt, which is an either-sex hunt, September 10th to September 23rd. That'll be starting on a Monday and ending on a Sunday. The late hunt, September 24th. To October 14th, again starting on a Monday and ending on a Sunday. And then the nanny hunt, October 1st to October 14th. And I believe that one is also starting on a Monday, ending on a Sunday.
So your proposal, the nanny, would overlap the late?
Right, which is exactly what the proposal is on the Beaver Unit as well. So with that late either sex tag, you'd have about a week. Those hunters would have about a week by themselves. And then they would overlap with the nanny hunt.
All right, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Jerry Hill. I don't have a comment card from the Mule Deer Foundation. I've got one from Bowhunters of Utah. Okay, Gordy.
I'm Gordy Bell with Bowhunters of Utah. I would like to just throw my support behind Ben's proposal from Yuba with the statewide archery hunt. If you guys will go back a little bit and look, I don't believe this RAC has ever voted to do away with that, nor has the Central Region RAC. That's important because the division keeps bringing up that it's a social issue where your two RACs make up over 70% of all license sales. So that proves out that it's not as controversial as people will make it seem. The 2008 deer survey backed that up as well. I just can't stress the need for opportunity that we keep losing here, and this is one good way to get it back. That's all I have.
Thank you.
So, Jerry, you want to come now?
Yeah, my name is Jerry Hill. I represent UWC. Good evening. I'd like to thank the RAC and the division for your dedication and hard work in regards to the wildlife and the sportsmen and women of Utah. The UWC supports the joint proposal presented by the Mule Deer Foundation, Utah Bowman's Association, and Bow Hunters of Utah in regards to statewide archery. In the coming months, we would also like the RAC and division to consider ways to implement comprehensive hunter management in the newly created mule deer subunits. Creating these subunits allows us to manage hunters and deer on a unit basis, yet we have chosen to manage every general season unit for $18 to $25 per 100 does. Between this year and next year, we will have removed 13,000 hunters, as well as the associated revenue. As you know, these cuts do not address our deer, rather the social aspect of deer hunting. Past division surveys have always showed that the most important thing to the majority of hunters is having the opportunity to be in the field with a tag. We also acknowledge that there is a segment of the population that desires bigger antlered deer at a cost of hunting less frequently. The UWC urges the division to come up with a comprehensive plan in the coming months to manage our general season units to reflect these statistics in the 2012 management plan. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. We don't have any more comment cards. Is there anyone else in the public who would like to comment on this agenda item? Seeing none, I did receive a letter from Jack Crossland. He's from Ogden. He wanted to see the bow elk hunt to begin a little bit later in the year, and he felt that it was wanted to be closer to the rut and have a little higher success. It's basically, I know that Anise is going to respond to his comments. So, I didn't receive any emails as of today when I had time to check my email. I'm not sure if anyone else did. So, Jim.
I got an email from Steve Perry, and Ann thinks she got it as well. Did no one else get that? Anyone got that? Except you.
I might have gotten it today when I, after I could had time, but.
This is regarding the once-in-a-lifetime application procedure. And, as near as I could figure out, he wants to make it possible to put in for more than one once-in-a-lifetime species each year, but only get one tag, and therefore get bonus points for the others that you put in for. Am I correct in?
So he would like to have residents be able to apply and receive bonus points similar to what we allow non-residents
to do. That's
correct,
yes.
Comments from the council? Jim.
I just want to comment on the presentation from the bow hunters And as I read item number one, we could substitute or we could eliminate archery tackle from their statement, and it would still be true. The number of hunters that harvest a deer are not statistically impacting the buck-bill ratios, whether they're archery hunters or rifle hunters. I would also love to hunt statewide. And I don't use a bow. And I don't really see that using a bow is should give you the privilege of hunting statewide when I don't think my muzzleloader impacts the, well, I can guarantee you, it doesn't impact the buck-bill ratio anywhere. And so I just don't think that that's a, I don't agree with that proposal and want to leave that on the table to start with.
John Leather.
I would like to agree with James on this issue. I've spent my whole life living in the woods all summer long, and I have a lot of bow hunters come up to me as I'm working there cutting trees, and they'll ask me, where's the deer? And I say, how you been doing? Well, I hit a 2-point over here, I hit a 3-point over there, and I find these deer laying dead in the woods. And I know rifle hunters kill them also, but I think that at some point, you know, bow hunters have pretty good. So I'd like to hunt statewide also with my rifle. I hunt with a bow also. But I think we need to start taking a look at how much of what we're allowing to happen and the number of people that are out crowding the woods all the time, which I love to do.
Don Leonard.
I have mixed emotions about this, but I also like the argument for dispersing more hunters, if that might attract more hunters into the archery season, where it certainly has less impact on populations. And, you know, we stated before that we're all for opportunity and may provide a lot more opportunity than we could get otherwise with the limited tags and that available on the 30 units. I'd like Anise to kind of address the comments made by those organizations, since they do represent a significant segment of the hunting population, and see if is a compelling argument from the division standpoint just difficulty in managing a statewide thing with the 30 units?
Logistically, it wouldn't be any different than it is currently. I mean, we have regions where we hunt regionally, and then archers still hunt statewide. So, no, it wouldn't be any more difficult. It just comes down to kind of perception of fairness and all that. You know, why do archers get to hunt statewide, as you mentioned, when we have to choose a unit? I think it was a little bit more fair when it was regional, because you get to hunt a whole region. But now that we're limiting folks to a specific unit, that's the main reason for it is the perception of fairness. Biologically, you know, we could do it. Logistically, we could do it. It's just what the public did not want to go that direction, the majority of the public.
I got a question for him. Well, I mean, I archery hunt, but going back to this 30 unit, I mean, when you're managing each unit for a buck to doe ratio, and you have a statewide archery, I mean, if, say, two or three of them get, you know, a higher buck to doe ratio, and it just puts a huge influx of archers in those units, I mean, isn't that kind of defeating the purpose of that?
It could, but that currently happens with regional hunting. I mean, there are units that have higher buck to doe ratios, and those do draw archers into them. And yeah, I mean, you will have that, but again, that's not something we won't pick up from the harvest surveys, from the classifications, and we'll be able to moderate. You're right. It would It would, because you're going to unit by unit, there may be those that are shopping for units that are, you know, supposed to be have a better hunt. But theoretically, if you're managing right, they should all be between 18 and whatever bucks per 100 does. So there shouldn't be any units that are better than others because they're all general season units. But, yeah, I mean, that happens currently. I mean, you hear about, oh, yeah, there's a lot of bucks on the Deep Creek. So everybody goes and hunts the Deep Creek 1 year, and then it ends up being a crowded hunt, and nobody hunts there the second year. So hunters move themselves around fairly well by themselves. And I think they do it, even if you let everybody hunt statewide, I think it would work out just fine. But that's not what the public wanted us to do.
Paul, Anise, before you walk away, can you address the mountain goat date, timing differences?
I'll let Darren address that since it's his unit. He's put a little more thought into it than I have.
Okay, thank you.
The primary concerns up there that we were trying to address with shorter hunts was some law enforcement concerns with the number of people. If you're not familiar with Willard Peak, there's a road that runs from Manaway all the way up to Willard Peak proper to Inspiration Point. It's very accessible. It's incredibly popular with hikers, motorcycle riders, ATV riders. And you're piling hunters in on top of those people. So the things we wanted to address was we wanted to split that hunt in order to alleviate some of the crowding issues between hunters. And we wanted to open it on a weekday so that we weren't throwing hunters on top of the weekend recreators. They'd have a Monday through Friday. Some of those hunters would then get their goat, and there'd be a little bit less. I didn't think about that. There'd be a little bit less pressure on top of other recreators and public perception and dead goats being dragged down the trail in front of people who maybe don't like that sort of thing. I think that both of those things would be addressed with the dates that Yuba has proposed. I don't think there's any biological reason why we couldn't do that. I had some concerns about Hunter Orange. Those have been alleviated through the new law where a goat hunter doesn't, a center rifle hunt, if you're hunting a goat, doesn't cause archers in the area to have to wear Hunter Orange. And so biologically, I don't have any concerns with their proposal in terms of dates. I think that works for what we were trying to do. So
thank you.
What is the success, if you don't mind me asking?
We're assuming 100%
right now
success. And it's actually over that. But it's a law enforcement issue. But biologically we're putting out permits that we expect to be filled, and that's how we're going to deal with population dynamics with the nanny hunt and with the other permits. And so that really isn't an issue. The dates are kind of moot. It was more of a way to try to. I didn't take into account archery hunters. I was thinking 9 days was plenty of time on that unit. The goats are fairly accessible with a rifle. And but I don't have any heartburn about extending those hunts. I don't think that's a problem biologically. So.
I just want to ask you about the dates, Darren. I'm trying to get my calendar up here to 2012. So the Beaver actually opens on a Saturday, but right. You'd prefer a Monday
opener. I'd prefer a Monday opener for the reasons I stated.
Yeah, so the 10th matches. So the first hunt would overlap the following weekend.
Right.
So in reality, you're just skipping the first Monday.
Yeah,
and
the logic behind that would be hunters would have a week without a lot of other users to go up and try to harvest a goat. The goats are, I don't want to say easy to harvest, but they're certainly accessible, and I think a lot of goats would probably get taken during that first week. So by that first weekend, there would probably be a little less overlap between the general public and hunters. I agree with the argument that a longer season for a once-in-a-lifetime species makes sense. So.
All right. Thank you very much. Right. Additional comments from the council? Let me just state, some of you weren't on the rack when the proposal came around for the 30 units. It might have been 29 at the time, but unit by unit management. We didn't vote for it. The Wildlife Board approved it. At that same meeting, they voted not to have statewide archery. So our agenda item for tonight is to set the season dates and the application timeline, basically what the presentation was. So if you care to make a motion that addresses statewide archery, please do it in a separate motion. Okay? Jim.
I move that we accept the recommendations from the division regarding bucks, bulls, and once-in-a-lifetime season dates.
As presented?
As presented.
Second.
Bryce, second. Discussion on the motion. Russ.
Well, I think, you know, that once-in-a-lifetime with the goat, I think it wouldn't hurt to extend those season dates and recommend that to the Wildlife Board.
On the goat hunt on the Willard goat. Peak.
Yeah, on Willard Peak, yeah.
Would you like to make an amendment, or would the maker of the motion be sympathetic to the change?
I don't have any heartburn. He wants to make an amendment.
Yeah, I would like to make that amendment that we extend those season dates on the go for the Willard Peak unit as presented to us.
If Jim is okay, and Bryce, since you second it, would you be in favor of that? We could just incorporate in the one motion, not have to amend the original motion?
Sure.
Okay. So the motion would be to approve the Bucks and Bulls and Once in a Lifetime 2012 season dates and application timeline as presented with the proposed changes for the Willard Peak goat hunt as far as the dates.
Okay.
Okay. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, we'll have a vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Unanimous? Anise?
We did get a clarification on why those season dates for those, and it's basically so people don't harvest animals during the season and are able to sell them and then go back and harvest another and sell it during the open season. That's the rationale for those. For those dates of selling green hides and all that. So they'd have to wait till the season's over before they could sell
them.
Before
they could sell them. Yeah. So you don't get.
So they're not taking a legal take. Yeah.
Are we okay on that one, Jody? Okay. All right. Boyd, do you mind if we take a short break? Okay. We're going to take a 15-minute break. And then we'll reconvene.
Anybody want
to make another motion? Did anyone want to make a motion on the statewide archery? Separate.
I have a question about how this works.
We can discuss it.
Okay, it'll only be a quickie question. So I just to get this clear, you said that the motion towards you and the statewide archery would be outside of our scope of our agenda for tonight. It would have to be done separately to the Wildlife Board. Is that what you said?
It would be outside of our action item on our agenda. Oh. So it would have to be something you would recommend. It would have to be a separate motion to the Wildlife Board. It's not really in our action tonight. It's been approved by the Wildlife Board.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Right, you'd have to go through the open it up for public comment on that very issue, where right now that public disclosure has not occurred.
So I'm just trying to determine whether we're going to open up a can of worms that can't be reclosed, or can we talk about this motion after the break?
You could make a motion, but it's not within
our agenda.
Our agenda.
Okay.
So it could just be a recommendation to the wildlife board. As I stated, they made the decision before.
So I don't want to keep muddy in the water here, but even if we did make a recommendation to that, when would it ever go, would the wildlife board ever be able to reassess that since they've already made the decision?
Well, I would present our motions at the wildlife board meeting.
Okay, and ask them to reconsider their last decision.
It would be a request from our regional advisory council. They would choose whether or not to address it. If they chose not to address it, they would tell me why, because that is not a decision we made. Right?
Okay, just think about it.
Yeah.
Can we take a break first?
I'll make that motion then, because I think we owe it to the public that showed up tonight to have that dialogue. That we make a recommendation to the board to reconsider that.
Well, decision. I'd second that.
So wait, what?
Reconsider the statewide archery.
I just wanted to make sure it was what we could actually do here without just saying something with no backup. But I'd second it for sure.
Here again, it's just a recommendation.
And I'm not really sure we can vote on something that's just being presented tonight.
Well, we'll have to vote on it because it's a motion, but it's not
an action item. It's an out-of-order motion. We don't have to vote on it.
Well, it's an action.
Well, but it's not an action item. It'd be good to see how many of our RAC agree with that recommendation. I think there's some value to that.
I don't disagree with that. I'm sorry.
Okay, so my comment was I think it is important to see how many on our RAC would stand behind that recommendation versus just having it be viewed as from our RAC, whether or not that's 2 or 12 or 6 of us would stand behind that recommendation. So I think voting would be appropriate.
You also have a different makeup of the wildlife board now. I'm not sure how their sympathies fall. We have two new members on the wildlife board. Personally, I don't expect it to change at the point we're at now, but we should either, you know, we'll vote on the recommendation whether it passes or not, and then we'll move ahead.
I think the important thing is that we are conveying public sentiment. This is a pretty significant hunter population that has presented an argument here tonight in favor of that. And I think we need to reflect that and pass that on to the Wildlife Board.
Any other discussion? Jim?
Well, for a long time I've had a fair amount of discomfort with the way the meetings go, as far as somebody just wants to bring up an idea and it's not on the agenda, and so that makes it very difficult for somebody to come in and say, hey, what about X, and we've only talked about Y and Z. Notwithstanding my discomfort, it's the way meetings should be held. A topic should be brought up, discussed as an informational item, and then brought back as an action item. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have any a philosophical objection to it, but I have some legality question to it.
And that's why I wanted it separate from our action item. We do make recommendations from time to time that aren't really part of the action item. They might be associated with it. Anise?
If I may, this actually could, because we are season date setting and season setting, this could be part of that. So it is a season that they're asking for, being statewide versus unit by unit. So it's not totally outside of what we're dealing with tonight. I just wanted to clarify that, so it's a little bit, you know, it is a recommendation outside of what we're recommending, but it doesn't fall outside of the scope of it, I guess.
The entire scope of the action item.
So, I mean, the board could, if they wanted to, adopt that at this board meeting, and it would still be something that we could move forward with.
Ann.
I just want to put my two bits in. I was approached. I manage a CW unit in the central region, and I was approached by a couple people in Tooele and on the west side, and they had vehement opinions about how the archers have more opportunities than others, and they felt it was unfair. And so I just wanted to reiterate some of the – there's a lot of feeling of unfairness with the statewide.
Any additional discussion on the motion? Paul.
I guess from my view, you know, we heard a gentleman earlier this in the meeting where he was fairly disgusted with the 30 hunt units. And it seems to me like we're basically readdressing that very issue again that has already been resolved. So it just depends on who brings the, not necessarily who brings the issue forward, but the quality there in addressing the statewide or the regions versus the 30 units. And for which group?
Jeffrey.
I also want to talk about the idea of fairness on this, but I've had people say both ways that archers seem to get more of a shot than everybody else. But on the other hand, I have to agree with John that there's a big enough segment that would like us to bring it up that it's probably worth it to at least make a motion on it and let us send it on if this particular rec chooses. I think it's worth at least sending it out there.
John Leonard.
And I'm not an archer, so and I kind of get a little tired of the issue of fairness and too much now with the bonus points and limited entry in that. We're losing track of the opportunity that hunting brings, and it's getting to be too much about me as an individual and how that affects me, and I'd like to see the opportunity out there, more opportunity. We're already going to reduce opportunity significantly with the 30 units. If that chases more hunters into the archery equipment and tackle and that, that does something about overcrowding, but again, you increase opportunity by doing that. And there's trade-offs there. It's certainly a more challenging issue than rifle hunts and muzzleloaders. But I think that we owe it to the public to relay the ideas and the opinions that have been addressed to us tonight. So we take a vote, you can vote whatever your conscience dictates, but let's vote and move on.
Bryce?
Me being an archer myself, I mean, I've talked to a few friends today about this issue. They're all, you know, archers. And it's just kind of like, I mean, we're all at the point we kind of like to sacrifice a little bit, everybody, whether it be rifle, muzzleloader, archer hunters, you know, to get away from the camping trips that everybody's complained about and get, you know, hopefully build the deer herd, you know, back to something that, you know, everybody has success at, you know, and I just think it, you know, across the board sacrifice for everybody, you know, might be good for everybody at this point. And I'm, you know, that's including me, being an archer. So
any other discussion? Okay, we're going to have a vote. The motion was recommend the Wildlife Board reconsider the statewide archery, reconsider allowing statewide archery. Okay, all in favor, please say aye and raise your hand so I can count you. So it's 4 in favor. Those opposed? Aye. 6 opposed. So the motion failed. Okay, now we're going to take a 15-minute break. We'll reconvene at 7:45.
No, I think the discussion is great.
Start it again.
I think.
Here comes John.
Looks like this table follows the rules, and this table's a little short.
Those are just the rebels over there. Good thing we moved Callie over here for tonight. Okay. We'll go ahead and start on item number 6, CWMU management plans and permit numbers for 2012. Boyd Blackwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'll be addressing the CWMUs, and then second will be the landowner associations. First of all, just a quick summary of the applications that we received this year. There are 87 CWMUs were required to renew. If you recall, we're on a three-year renewal plan, and there's 87 that fell within the amount that we're required to renew for the 2012 season. 83 of those CWMUs renewed. Four CWMUs dropped out of the program. One CWMU, the division is recommending application be denied, and I'll go over that in more detail when I cover the regional issues. And then there's one CWMU only that we have a split recommendation this year. Everything else the division is recommending approval as we've received them. 10 CWMUs will be required for renewal next year, and 15 for the year for 2014. There were 9 new CWMU applications that we received this year, and they all received approval from the division. And so this will bring our total to 116 CWMUs for the 2012 season, if approved. The northern region, as you can see, has the lion's share with 70, northeastern 5, central region 12, southeastern 16, and the southern 13. It takes in 2 million acres in the state, and 444 landowners are currently participating in the program. There are 104 CWMUs that are requested buck deer permit, 61 bull elk, 30 bull moose, 13 pronghorn, and 3 have requested turkey. We found that since we've gone over the counter with turkey permits that people are just not needing them in the CWMUs. Most of the CWMUs get them and keep their permits for their families and then allow that number of public hunters. We have a total of 2,940 permits, private permits, and 488, which is 17% of the public permits. Now I'll cover some of the regional issues. As you can see, the first 5 are the new CWMUs for the northern region. The division is recommending approval. The Junction Valley is a change in boundary, and so they've increased their boundary but left their permits the same. In the northeastern region, the Aventiquin and the Buckhorn Ranch are new CWMUs. They're for deer only. And then the central region is that Skull Valley North CWMU doesn't have enough acreage. They submitted an application, but they do not have enough acreage to be approved for a CWMU. When we asked them for plat maps and information, they weren't able to come up with those, and so this was their acreage. The southeastern region has one new CWMU and then some boundary changes on Mini Mod and Spring Creek Dodge. The new Harmony is a new CWMU this year for deer and turkey. The Johnson Mountain Ranch is requesting a change in their deer permits from 27-3 to 9-1. And then the Alton CWMU is requesting a change. They requesting 5-1, a total of 6 buck deer management buck deer permits. The size of their CWMU and using the permit calculations, they qualify for 3-1, and that is the division's recommended that we give them the 3-1 that they qualify for. Thank you.
Thank you, Boyd. Do we have any questions from the public on Boyd's presentation? Seeing none, we'll go to questions from the council on Boyd's presentation. Boyd, in the packet, there's two CWMUs that the private acres, it shows a number, but then it doesn't show a percentage. If you look at Bear Springs, I'm assuming that's 100%. But
yes.
And there's one other, and I'll have to look for it real quick here.
Yeah, on that, if it doesn't, the problem that we had with that one was it didn't get added in on the access document maker. So it was just, it wasn't wide enough. The column wasn't wide enough to allow it in. And that'll be the same on that other one, too.
My other question is on compensation for including public land.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem to be consistent throughout unless it's not noted here. So can you explain how you require...
There are two things that they can do. The first one is that they can provide the percentage of their property. They can provide also comes off the top in permit numbers. So if they use, 10% of their CWMU as public land, then they take off that top 10% before the splits even take place, and that goes into the pool for the public permits, public permits. And then they do the split. Then the other way is they can provide the same amount, acre per acre, for another piece of land for the CW, for the public to hunt in another area. And those are the two methods.
Okay, is there a percentage of the total where you don't require compensation?
Only if it's less, if it comes out to less than one permit.
Okay, so if you'd look at Fort Ranch.
For which ranch?
Fort Ranch.
Okay.
It's on the back of the second. Yeah, it is page 8. They have 4.1% of public acres. But it doesn't state any specific compensation there.
Because I believe on that one, and I would ask the region to comment on that. But I believe it's because it doesn't qualify for one permit.
That's right.
Okay. How about, is Lone Tree Taylor Hollow the same?
Yes. It's 1.1%.
And Promontory Point, same thing. Doesn't qualify for one. Okay.
I recently came out and I gave specific directions to the regions to make sure that they follow this closely, and I've provided them with a permit table where all they have to do is put in the numbers, and then it spits out at the bottom what the breakdown is going to be. So I feel pretty confident in. And what the regions have provided me here with compensation.
Okay. The reason for my question is, obviously, we have a lot of CWMUs, yep. And we have the public is
yep.
quite
you
interested
bet.
in that
I
compensation
totally
specifically.
Understand.
Yeah. So, all right. Thank you. Any additional questions from the council? Paul.
Boyd, I'm wondering on the public lands, has there been much of a discussion with those public land managers to be sure that we're not having problems with outfitter and guiding legalities on the public lands portion of those CWMUs?
Randy Wood again. Yeah, the biologists contact those public land managers when their CWMU incorporates public land into it. So they would go talk to the BLM or to the Forest Service of that area. as they're making the recommendations.
Okay, so they just verify whether or not that person is allowed to outfitter and guide or are not allowed.
Yeah, that, well, they include it. They don't check to see if that guy has a permit or not to guide on forest. That would come up under you guys to, if he's guiding on the forest, we don't check that.
Okay.
Any additional questions from the council? Seeing none, we'll go to comments from the public. Todd?
Yeah, coordination.
Paul, just real quick, it's my understanding when that legislation was passed, whether the with the guide and outfitter legislation, that CWs, regardless whether they had private or public, were excluded from that guide and outfitter legislation.
No, they're not with federal law.
This, yeah, this
and policy.
They're excluded from the state thing, but not from the federal.
Not from the federal requirements.
Law.
I respectfully disagree. I challenge you guys to look at the legislation because it was drafted and included in that. Okay, I appreciate your time here tonight.
Todd
Black.
Your name.
Yeah, sorry.
There you go,
Todd Black, I appreciate your time here tonight and also your service and efforts. I know this is can sometimes be beat your head against the wall job, but I appreciate your service. I'm here representing the Sardine Canyon CWU in your packet. I don't know if it falls under Region 1 or 2 because it's on the border. But if you find it there, just following procedure and protocol here, I've talked with Boyd and also our local biologist, Darren, up there. Our current plan, you can see on the handout that I gave you, are our current management plan. We didn't change what we have from the previous 3 years. So the season dates were September 1 through the 31st. The public split was, and the permits issued to the CWU were an 18-2, which is a 90-10 split. So over 3 years, there were 60 total tags. The public hunter season dates, we had them hunting just the 5 days during the general season hunt. We want to propose to change that, and again, we... As far as I know, we have Division of Wildlife support on this, but we want to change those season dates to take the later season date, the September 11th through November 10th season date, or the 10th to the 10th, whatever it is, Boyd. Also, we want to reduce the total number of tags and vouchers, both to the private and the public, that we'll receive over the three-year period as follows, for 13-2 for the first year, 13-1 and 13-1 for the subsequent 2 years over the course of the management plan for a total of 39 private and 4 public vouchers. And then in correspondence with rule on the with the season dates, we proposed that the public hunter will have the opportunity to choose between 2 dates, which is the September 11th through the 15th or the first 5 days of November. I ask for your consideration in that. Thank you.
Todd, can you come back for a sec? So I thought you said 9/11 through 11/11, but you're asking for 11/5.
Whatever the standard check the box is, which is it?
11/10.
Okay. And but the public hunter would be able to hunt the first 5 days of the November hunt.
Thank you.
Okay.
Boyd, do you want to respond?
Sure. Talking with Darren, I guess they recommended approval, but the problem was that he submitted the application and the management plan. We received it, reviewed it, approved it, and at the 9-1 and 10/31, and the 18-2, because it was after the fact, we couldn't get it changed in time for this meeting, and so we've asked him to come and present that at the RAC meeting for approval to make that change.
So you would be supportive?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Any additional comments from the public? I don't have any other blue cards. Seeing none, we'll close off public comment. Comment from the council. Anne.
I need to abstain from voting as I am associated with the CWMU.
Thank you. Any comments from the council? John? Go ahead.
My question is, being new here, I assume the number of permits is set up through history and wildlife counts. When you determine how many permits, it's just a biological count or...
Boyd.
Yes, and also, in particular, especially on limited entry units, it goes by the proportion of permits, the overall permits that are available to the public versus the proportion or the size of the CWMU. And then they're allowed to select their split, and then that those portions, that's how the permits are proportioned out.
So if the CWMU falls within the boundaries of a limited entry unit, then it's proportioned by acreage. But there's also a public percentage of the permits on the CWMU.
So in light of the concern over the deer population, are there anything happening in the CWMUs that reflects a change in harvest or...
I can only have you up, Todd, if somebody asks a specific question of you. But I think Boyd can respond.
Yeah, currently the CWMUs are getting less permits on the CWMU than we have on the other units proportionally already, and so that's already taken into consideration. The biologists were asked to look at that closely this year, knowing that we were going in that direction. And they were supposed to take a look at those and make that comparison as well.
Thank you.
Bryce.
Is there any other variances where they go over the 9-to-1 ratio on any other CWMUs?
No. No, it's a 90-10 split or an 80-20 split, an 85-15, and a 75-25 split. They make the choice. And how they make that, and then they make that choice and what they choose has an effect later on when we do our antlerless permits, because the public will get the exact opposite.
So when we set the permit numbers for the antlerless on the CWMU, it kind of flip-flops. The public's going to get a larger percentage of the tags than the CWMU will of the antlerless animals. If they selected 50-50 in the males, then it would be 50-50 in the antlerless. But because they're selecting 90-10 or 85-15, that kind of determines the split for the antlerless animals also.
I was just curious why it was a 39-4 instead of a 36-4.
If you add them together, you get 43, which ends up being a partial animal. Any additional comments from the council? Chair would entertain a motion.
John? I'll make a motion that we accept the division's proposal with the addition of the proposed changes to Sardine Canyon as presented.
We have a motion from John Letter and a second from Craig Van Tassel. Let me find my agenda real quick. There we go. There it is. Motion is to recommend the approval of the CWMU management plans and permit numbers for 2010 with the addition of the proposed changes for the Sardine Canyon CWMU. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. So we have 9-4 with one abstention. Boyd, go ahead.
Thank you.
This will be item number 7, landowner permit numbers for 2012.
A landowner association permits for the 2012 statewide overview here. We have received 15 applications. The division is recommending approval of all 15 that we've received. There is no split recommendations. There are 125 deer vouchers, 4 management buck vouchers, 93 elk vouchers, and 9 pronghorn vouchers. Thank you.
Wham! That was quick. I barely got the motion written down.
Well, we got the lights turned off, and then we turned them back.
Yeah. Are there any questions from the public on Boyd's presentation? Questions from the council? I don't have any blue cards on this agenda item from the public. Is there anyone who'd like to comment? Okay. Comments from the council? Seeing none, chair would entertain a motion. John Wall.
I make the motion. We accept the division's recommendations as presented.
Is there a second? John Blazard. Okay, we have a motion and a second to accept the landowner permit numbers for 2012 as presented. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None. It's unanimous.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Boyd. I think you have the record for the shortest presentation I've ever seen on one agenda item.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Gaskell.
I think that in fairness to Mr. Perry, who sent us all an email, that we ought to discuss that topic for a minute, not to make a motion, but at least to put into the minutes that we considered it. And I personally feel that he has a good point, that particularly non-residents have a distinct advantage over residents in this matter of being able to apply for more than one once-in-a-lifetime permit every year. And so I don't know if anyone else wants to make a comment on that, but if not, then I'd ask that be included in the minutes.
Okay. I, like you, remember when you used to be able to put in for everything, and I still have some extra bonus points in some stray categories, like pronghorn, and I had deer points when I finally drew my elk. And I think when it came around, there were some questions about that change. I think it does generate some revenue for the division. It could potentially generate more revenue. But at the time, I think they were trying to reduce the number of applicants also when we had a huge glut Utah State resident applicants for a limited resource of tags, so kind of my remembrance when that first came around. Anyone else like to comment? John Blazard.
It seems like if you only are allowed to put in for one once in a lifetime at a time, I think basically it is a once in a lifetime because by the time you go through the 16 to 18 years or whatever it takes to draw out, then you start on the next one, you're going to be too dang old and decrepit. I guess you have to pick on the hardest hunt first and end up with the easiest one last. I don't have a problem with, you know, with the limiting the draw and everything, but it would sure be nice to be able to accrue some bonus points, especially in light of the idea that if you don't apply for a species in 3 years, the way I understand it, you lose your bonus points. Is that if you don't put in for any? Or is that
I think that's if you don't put in for anything, if you don't have a application in 3 years
for any
animal, I believe.
I mean, you know, when you get a little older, you start thinking about once in a lifetime really means, or even limited.
Jumping species. Once you finally draw a tag, then you start over from scratch. Bryce.
I'm pretty unlucky at drawing stuff, so I'd rather just keep it a chance of me being able to draw a sheep tag in my lifetime, not having 10,000 other people, you know, compounded the problem. So it's going to take me another 30 or 40 years probably to get it, so keep the odds as low as they are, good as they are. So.
And so what's the rationale for allowing non-residents to do that? Simply because there's a smaller pool? Or because they generate more money?
And Anise, could you comment? I can't remember.
It's both. It's a smaller pool, so that they're not keeping the residents from drawing because they're you know 10% only of the total number of permits, and it allows us to generate a little more revenue without affecting the draw odds of residents.
Do they have to buy a non-resident license to put in?
They do. Exactly. But and it's also $10 for each species. So now, just to kind of address what you said, if you opened it up, you're not more likely to draw any of those individually as you were. Yeah, it does make you feel better that you put in. It's kind of going to Vegas, but... anyway,
it's the only legal lottery in Utah, right?
It's not a lottery.
I know at least one attorney that disagrees with that.
It could generate more revenue.
By the way, Steve moved to Nevada. That's why he's not here anymore.
Any additional discussion? Seeing none. Are you okay with the discussion we had, Jim?
I am. I'm very pleased. Thank you very much.
All right.
I'll move to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. Adjourned at 8:15. Thank you, everyone, for coming.
I'm Lori Bill.